City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.
This is Talk to Trisha on City Talk 105.9.
Tomorrow is the start of Foster Care Fortnight, and for the next 2 weeks, City Talk will be working with the independent agency Fostering Solutions to raise awareness of all aspects of foster care and the people involved in it. Well, there are currently more than 50,000 young people in foster care in the UK, but despite these figures, foster families are still in short supply. 1,700 homes are desperately needed in the northwest alone. Now, there's a particular shortage of homes for boys aged between 5 and 12, brothers and sisters, and ethnic minority youngsters. Almost anyone can apply to be a foster carer, but some people will be more suited to it than others. So joining me now to talk about this more are Jimmy Clark, who is head of Liverpool City Council's fostering service, and Alan and Barbara, who've looked after 20 children over the last 16 years. Welcome to City Talk, all of you. Let me start with you, Alan and Barbara. What made you decide to become foster parents?
I've always wanted to do it. And I spoke to Alan and we talked about it, and he wasn't very keen, actually. So I didn't push anything and I left it.
Oh, well, you know, let me ask Alan why. Why weren't you keen, Alan?
We'd come to a time in our life that our children had come to the age where they didn't want to be around the parents that often. And
yeah,
we had some time for ourselves, and I thought we would start to live a little bit more of our lives together. So
yeah,
that was the only reason for not wanting to do it. But
but Barbara got round you, didn't she? How did you do that, Barbara?
I really didn't, you know. I just left it. And Alan was a community worker in attached to our local church, and he just came home one night and he said to me, I've done it. And I said, done what? And he said, I've rung up the council to talk to someone about fostering, and somebody's going to be coming out to see us. And well, you could have knocked me over with a feather because I was that sort of shocked that he'd actually done it. And, you know, from there on, there's been no turning back, really. And
so
life's
Alan,
been fun.
Life has been fun and challenging. But,
yep.
Alan, what made you change your mind in the end?
I think mainly it was because I was sitting in my office writing a report, and it was just a matter of, in a quiet time, thinking I'm being a bit selfish in what Barbara really wants to do. So it was a matter of me stopping and thinking about what we could offer as a couple. So that was the reason for making the phone call.
So can I ask, how old were you both when you started fostering?
Oh, heck, 16 years ago, 17 years ago. I'm 61 now, I can't wait that one out.
OK, mid-40s.
Yeah.
Mid-40s.
Yeah.
And what was it like, that first... Because the idea is one thing, but the first foster child who comes to your house and... Well, you're laughing. What was it like?
Scary. because... I mean, he actually was a fantastic boy, he really was. He gave us many funny moments, but he gave us a lot of scary moments too.
How old was he?
He was 16, and it was a remand scheme that we started on, where we looked after young children who were put on remand.
Yeah.
Save them going into, was it bail hostel or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
we took some children. He was our first one. He was really funny, especially the time I caught him. And I was driving past the house with a friend, and he was shinning up the drainpipe, trying to get into his bedroom because he'd forgotten something. And I screamed at the friend, and the brakes went on the car, and we reversed. And, oh, what are you doing? Anyway, I let him in to get whatever he wanted.
but is it... I was just thinking, there's that moment, you know, when you have your own children. I've always said there's that moment you get back from the hospital and with the first one, and you think, what do we do now?
Mm.
What do we do now? You know, and you think, flipping heck, how did they actually let us leave the hospital with this live child? Did you actually think, let me ask you, Alan, did you ever think, what do I do now? Am I a dad, a big brother, a teacher, a carer? How was that?
I think the first few boys, really, that we had, they were teenage boys on remand. We had to really understand why they were with us and not to be able to be too lenient with them, but to be to let them relax and be themselves because there were so many restrictions on their movement.
Right.
So it was being like, I suppose, I wouldn't say big brother because the age difference was too great to be that, but,
yeah.
You know, to be an uncle, I think, at the time yeah. when they needed somebody to talk to. And if they wanted to talk, we would sit down and have that time. If they didn't, well, it was up to them. They were calling the shots on that time.
And so did you and Barbara have to sit down and work out what the rules were on your own before the children actually pitched up?
Yeah, but, I mean, we do... you have to have a policy called a safe caring policy, and it lays out the boundaries of the house, really. What they can and cannot do, bedtimes and times to, that they can come in, etc. And they're all negotiable with the children, but you do have to have that sort of policy in place, both for the protection of the children and yourself, and to keep them... It's basically to keep them safe. Because
it's not unlike what you do with your own kids, is it, really?
It's exactly the same, because you have boundaries for your own children as well. Yeah. But some of the children you look after, boundaries are a very strange thing to them.
What would you say the benefits are for you? Because, I mean, we're all basically, we've got a bit of selfishness in us, and I'm guessing that you wouldn't have been doing this for the last 16 years if there wasn't some kind of payback, buzz, good feeling, etc. Alan, Barbara, what would you say that has been for you?
While you're doing it, you don't think about reward. But if you can help just one child out of the many that you foster, that is... a reward. I mean, we're told that children, while we're fostering, children don't sort of think about the things we're doing for them, and that it may, in years to come, they will look back and think, oh, the time we were with Barbara and Alan, we were safe.
Yeah.
You know, we were fed and we were well cared for. And that's what you hope for with the children you look after. I mean, we have been very fortunate because quite a few of the children that we've looked after do come back and visit us, which
great.
Is really good, and that is another plus point. You know, and to be honest, I don't think either of us would do anything else now, you know.
And what about you, Alan? What would you say the pluses are?
I think the pluses are...
Because you didn't get to get Barbara all to yourself in the end, did you?
No, and still don't. Having just spent a week away together for the first time in 16 years, a first holiday that we've had without children's, it's been a great experience for both of us. But I think the whole thing about looking after children, to see somebody achieve, whether it may be that they've gone to school for a week, which they've never put a week's schooling in, it's just seeing each child that you care for come into your care for so many different reasons.
Yeah.
And if you can affect a child's life in any way, and that is just by giving them unconditional love, and that was, for me, is the most important thing that we give to the children come through our home. We give them unconditional love.
That must be really, really a shock to the system for quite a few of the kids, that someone who's not related to them, who's not in the system, what have you, is willing to do all this for them.
Well, it's what we're about, it's who we are, and it's if we can give all of ourselves to anybody, whether they're in care or as people that we come into contact with, we will do. But our job is to look after vulnerable young people.
Now, let me ask you, is there a difference between both of you? Is there a difference between, obviously, there's got to be fostering girls and fostering boys. Do you find, for instance, one would assume, maybe wrongly, that if you foster boys, Alan, you get to do the lion's share of the work, and if you foster girls, there's a lot more that falls on Barbara. Is that true or not?
Well, yeah, it can be, but we're a partnership. You know, there's some certain things that I will deal with the girls that, you know, Alan wants to know part in. But, you know, we're a partnership and we do try and work together with whatever we have, boys or girls, really.
And when we think about fostering, we think about children within the UK. But recently you've been involved in fostering children from outside the UK without giving too much away. That's something that a lot of people who might be thinking of fostering might actually not even understand or realise that there's a need for. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that...
left. We were just coming to the end of one placement, and we were asked if we'd like to take some children from a children's home who came from outside the UK. And we didn't give a second thought, to be honest. We just said yes, we'd do it. It's been a fun 4 years. I've described it as a roller coaster of a ride. And I don't like roller coasters. But this one's been fun. It's a different culture.
Have you had to learn a lot about that different culture?
Yeah, we do research things, and we did research their culture before they came to us. So we knew something about the type of country they came from. We don't know about their history. That is, you know, the children, that is, you know, for them to tell us when, if they ever do.
So you don't find out the children's history that come to you? You're not told?
Not with these, no. Nobody knows. It's different foods.
So did you have to learn how to cook the different foods?
Yeah.
Why are you laughing, Alan?
He's the main cook, Trisha, not me.
How sexist of me, assuming it's you, Barbara. So
The girls had been in England for 2 years before they came to us, and so they had a lot of Western food and got used to Western food, but trying to take them back to some of the food that they would have ate at home, they really didn't want to go that way. So it was a matter of encouraging them to tell me what they wanted to eat.
Yeah.
We cook a lot of rice and beans, and we eat an awful lot of chicken. The girls, you know, don't like a lot of red meat, so
no.
We basically... And a lot of spices and different things from, you know, a lot of fish and chicken done with spices.
That must have been a bit of a buzz, learning a whole new way of cooking.
I bought a lot of new cookbooks.
None of them written by Delia.
No, not out of cans.
At all. And without giving too much away, just saying the girls have absolutely flourished. One's got 12 GCSEs, one's doing A-levels, one's preparing for university. So these girls have absolutely flourished under you, haven't they?
They have. They've changed totally from when we got them 4 years ago. And they always said they wouldn't speak Scouse. They were never going to speak Scouse.
And they speak Scouse?
But they do.
Which,
yeah. And the fun word at the moment is spuds. They find that very amusing.
Especially as Alan probably doesn't cook them anymore. Is it sad saying goodbye?
Oh, it's awful. I don't like to think about it. I always said I would never do babies and young children because it would be too tearful. Teenagers, we've always done teenagers, and they're just as tearful. I think everybody who's left have cried. You know, because you become attached to them no matter what they do, what they say, what they throw at you, and sometimes they do throw at you. You still have a heart for them, and when they move on, it is upsetting, and you cry behind the door. I have been told off for crying many a time, but I can't help it.
So, Alan, do you cry?
I cry tears with when I think of some of the stories that we've about the children we've looked after. You can't help but cry with them and for them. But the beauty of it all is when they knock on the door, when they've left, and they come back. And in some cases of the children, they bring their children with them. You know, that is so nice to be able to think that we've been part of their life, and they want to introduce their children into our family.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we're about, it's not just Barbara and Alan involved in this, it's the family that are involved in this. My daughter, my son, my grandchildren, you know, they're all part of this. My grandson, you know, he has only ever known foster children in our home. and he sees them as his brothers and sisters.
And socially that sets him up so well, doesn't it, to appreciate and accept everyone, no matter where or what or, you know, what they've been through. Let me bring in Jimmy Clark, who, just to remind you, is head of fostering services for Liverpool City Council. Jimmy, what do people do if they're listening to Alan and Barbara and thinking, well, you know, I think we could do that? How on earth do you start?
Well, the first thing is, Tricia, is that we asked them to contact Liverpool City Council through our care line services, and we asked people to obviously identify themselves as people who are interested, just simply in exploring the possibility that they may be able to become a foster carer for us.
But do they have to be really, really checked out?
Well, obviously, the primary idea is to ensure that children are safe.
Yeah.
And we carry out all the reasonable things that you might expect us to do to ensure that people are safe. So we carry out police checks and background checks on people, just to ensure ourselves as a starting point that people haven't got a record which would exclude them from looking after children safely.
Now, you say a record that would exclude them, so, I mean, I'm thinking of, when I think of some of the guests I meet on my show, might have had a misdemeanour 20, 30 years ago and have really turned their lives around. Providing that wasn't something that would put the children at risk, are you saying that doesn't necessarily exclude them from being a foster
parent? It doesn't necessarily exclude them, but I think people would recognise that there are some offences faced by law that obviously would exclude people from becoming carers for children. But there are other, obviously, things in which people have done something daft when they were young, and we will look into that and we'll talk over the consequences of that particular misdemeanour, and we'll make our decision as to whether these people ultimately have a good heart and good intentions for our children. I often say to all our carers, you can't buy or train a good heart. Everything else we can train. But you've got to come with a good heart and good intentions for caring for other people's children.
So do you actually train foster carers? Do they get some kind of training?
Oh, indeed they do. Barbara and Alan will say extensively almost every other week that they're being asked to attend a training course.
Oh, so it's ongoing as well?
Absolutely ongoing. The needs of children are ever expanding. Our knowledge about the needs of children is ever expanding. We need to keep ourselves fresh and up to date on things like child development, etc. So we encourage all our carers to attend regular training. And we look upon foster carers as a profession in Liverpool. We look upon our carers as people who are involved. It's the same as social workers are in the profession of childcare. And we expect similar standards of behaviour, and we provide similar standards of support.
Now, there's a particular need, I understand, in the region for carers of boys aged 5 to 12, as I said earlier, brothers and sisters and ethnic minority youngsters. Let's deal with those groups step by step. Are boys 5 to 12, why is that? Is it because there are more in the system or because they're not as popular to be fostered? What's the problem there?
I don't think there's the problem would be, I think, about what people are looking for when they become foster carers. I think when people are looking at foster care, quite often they think of children and very young infants,
babies.
I suppose, yes.
Yeah.
But the reality is that young boys, because I think sometimes because of their physicality sometimes, tend to be a little bit more boisterous. And I think sometimes people think, oh, well, you know, they are more problem than maybe the girls of a similar age.
Yeah.
For that reason, I think we have more expectations from foster carers coming forward requesting, oh, you know, can I look after a young girl, for instance, rather than the lads. And it's really the lads who quite often need the guidance that Alan has spoken about and Barbara has spoken about.
Yeah.
Because lads in particular nowadays, I mean, lads and girls, but in particular lads are going through a particular interesting period, I think, in terms of the expectations of young men nowadays within society and the demands, upon society makes upon young men.
Yes,
and so they need as equal amount of guidance as young girls do. And at this moment in time, we would be looking for carers, particularly for those, entering adolescence, so to speak, because particularly if you can get a child who might be having some difficulties, if you can get them, early, around the time when adolescence hits, you can make really big changes in their lives, and that's why we want foster carers to come forward to look after this particular group of children.
And why brothers and sisters? They're not still splitting them up, are they?
No. I mean, our primary importance is to keep families together. I mean, Barbara has spoken about long-term care, but obviously a lot of our carers look after children for short periods of time. Sometimes
how long's short a period?
It can sometimes be for one night.
Oh, right.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
you Alan and Barbara are laughing. So if you had some one-night stands in that way?
Yeah, we have. It's called emergency. Well, it was called emergency placements. I mean, just get them overnight.
If you can imagine, let's say single mum at home and becomes incapacitated. Let's say, for instance, becomes unwell, has to go into hospital, has no extended family or friends who can look after baby.
Of course, yeah.
And of course, we then step in and say, we know Alan and Barbara, and we then go to Alan and Barbara or similar, and we say, and as I say, we make a placement, and 2 days later, mum's out of hospital.
Ah,
and baby's back with mum. So it's not all long-term foster care. A lot of placements we make are for shorter periods of time, though obviously we do have longer-term foster care placements as well.
Now, ethnic minority youngsters, obviously, as we've heard from Barbara and Alan and Alan's new culinary skills, you don't necessarily have to be from the same background, because people might think, oh, I can only have an ethnic minority youngster if I'm from that same ethnic minority.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case, so you're saying?
No, because obviously, at the end of the day, what do all children need? Regardless of colour, love and care, that's exactly, and part of that, obviously, is safety. Now, that's the bottom line. Obviously, there are different needs. Every child has different needs, and we spend an awful lot of time with carers and with children in order to match those needs of those children with particular carers. And part of our recruitment campaign is to ensure that children have a wider choice. We have 320 carers at this moment in time, and what we want to offer is more and more choice to the children coming in through the front doors, and of course mums and dads who obviously parent these children and maybe short-term foster care. And what we want to have is a whole menu of carers in which children's needs can be matched and choices can be made, even if that's only geographically. So, for instance, you might be a parent who might need your child looked after for a number of months living in South Liverpool. We would like to offer perhaps more carers down South Liverpool rather than the north end of Liverpool. So the more carers we have in terms of age, range, ethnic minority, background, life skills, the better choices we're able to provide for children and the better matching we are able to provide. We offer support in terms of training. We offer some financial support as well and reward. So I would say to anybody out there who's interested in looking after other people's children and has got a good heart and really want to assist us in this, come forward. We're not interested in whether you have a big house, a small house, family or friends, whether you're a single parent.
So you could be a single person on your own and still foster?
Absolutely. We're not interested in sexual orientation. None of those should be barriers to you becoming a foster carer. We are interested in ensuring that our foster carers represent the community of life that is out there. And of course, everyone has something different to bring to the table. Everyone has something different to bring to a particular child.
Right, now, Jimmy, so just to say to people again, if they're interested in fostering, they phone Liverpool City Council and ask for... Have you got the number?
Yes, 233 3029.
233 3029.
Yes, and that's our care line number, which is our entry into Liverpool City Council. And if you just say, I'm interested in becoming a foster carer, they will put you in touch with the foster care service. We'll come to your house, if that's what you wish, and we'll have an informal chat over a cup of coffee. And if we think the things can be progressed, we then move into a much more formal assessment of your capabilities. And then we move towards, obviously, at the end of the day, you becoming a foster carer.
And you'd always have support, I'm guessing, for foster parents, if they suddenly get into a situation where they think, what do I do next? Is there's somebody with whom they can liaise? Is there?
Everyone's allocated a support and social worker. Every set of carers are allocated a social worker. Every child is allocated a social worker.
Okay.
We have a psychological service from our looked after children adolescent mental health service, and that offers a whole range of services and opportunities to discuss children's behaviour and offer support. And we have obviously contact numbers through mobiles, etc. So in those emergency situations, when you just need to speak to somebody or say help, we have people on hand who can assist you and talk you through those particular moments.
So you're not on your own.
You're never on your own.
No. So Alan and Barbara, you'd say to people that are thinking about it, go for it?
Definitely.
Yes, without doubt.
Without doubt. Yeah.
Without doubt. Thank you so much for talking to us. It's been absolutely fascinating. Alan, with your new culinary skills, I expect you'll be opening up a restaurant soon.
He's a darn good cook. He's a darn good cook, I tell you that.
I know, and his repertoire is getting better. I think you better go through all lots of different ethnic groups. So I can see Alan and Barbara's restaurant now.
Yes.
Alan, Barbara, thank you so much for talking to us.
You're welcome.
Jimmy Clark, Head of Fostering Service for Liverpool City Council. I do thank you for your time.
Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9.
Well, as I said in the introduction, City Talk is working with Fostering Solutions to mark Foster Care Fortnight, which starts tomorrow. Fostering Solutions are an independent fostering agency with a Liverpool office on Smithdown Road. Now, there are all sorts of events in and around Merseyside over the next couple of weeks. Get involved. If you'd like to go out and find out more, go to www.fosteringsolutions.com, or you can contact the Fostering Solutions information line, and their number is 08 453 700 500. I'll give you that number again. It's 08 453 700 500.
This is Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9.
Listen, and log on to the Voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.